Hello, everyone. Welcome to Behind the Backstretch, a podcast brought to you by the Backside Learning Center, a nonprofit organization based on the backside of Churchill Downs Racetrack in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm your host, Andrew Crum, and I'm excited to be back. It has been a couple months since our last podcast. And folks, it is almost the Derby season. And with that being almost the Derby season, this podcast will be focusing on our third annual Derby Handicapping Social, which is our major awareness event for the Backside Learning Center leading up to the Derby at the Louisville Thoroughbred Society. The event takes place on April 16th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., features a handicapping seminar with a panel featuring Caden Bradar, Cho Christofek, and Gabby Gaudet, and moderated by our first guest of this podcast, just a little bit, Donna Barton Brothers, the former jockey and current racing analysts. Also, this event will include opportunities to learn more about the BLC and get involved, network with people in the industry, and more. But today, we are also joined by our intern, Samantha Versace from U of L, as she will be leading the interviews on this podcast today and also will be supporting, I believe, with upcoming podcasts until our time with us is over at the end of the semester. So, Samantha, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So, if you could tell me just a little bit about your background, where you're from, and kind of what led you to the U of L Equine School.
Absolutely. So I'm currently a junior at U of L studying equine business and marketing with a minor in management. I am originally from upstate New York, so my home track is Saratoga. I've spent the last five summers there hot walking and doing miscellaneous jobs, which have been great, kind of really helped jumpstart my passion for horse racing. I came down here obviously for the U of L equine industry program, and that has led me to so many different opportunities, this being one of them. It's been great so far, and I learned about the BLC actually through my program director about 2 years ago. She put out an announcement about your first annual handicapping social, and I jumped on that opportunity, networked with a bunch of people, which was awesome, and then found out you guys were hiring for an intern, so applied right away, and here I am now.
There you go. And, you know, what have you learned, I guess, so far with your internship, and what are you looking forward to, not just with this internship, but also just as you move forward in your career, kind of in the industry?
So right now I'm supposedly focusing on equine marketing and fundraising, but I've kind of enjoyed doing everything else that you guys have had me do. Mm-hmm. Just kind of seeing the net of how many people are really here. I also work at another backside charity called the Safety Net Foundation, so very comparable to you guys and what you're helping the backside with, so I really enjoy that aspect. Also being a backside worker and seeing how much you guys really connect with the community, and hopefully taking away from that just a lot of stuff, I guess, what I learned here between fundraising, communications, a lot of the things kind of behind the scenes that we've done. I don't really know what I'm going to do with my future yet after college, but hopefully a lot of these skills I can take with me too, which would be great.
All right. So Samantha, and we appreciate you so much having you as an intern and helping out with this podcast. As I mentioned earlier, she will be just talking with Donna Barton Brothers. She will be also talking with Buff Bradley, who is on our board here at the BLC, who is also a trainer and owner. So we are really excited to speak with him about his background and also his involvement with the BLC. So I'm going to thank Samantha again for joining us and helping lead these interviews. And first, here is Donna Barton Brothers. Donna, how are you today?
I'm well. How are you, Andrew?
We're doing well. And Samantha is also with us on the podcast as well.
Hi.
We'll be leading this interview. So take it away, Samantha.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrew. Well, thank you for being here, Donna. If you could, please tell us a little bit about yourself, what your involvement is in the industry.
My whole entire life has been in the industry. So my mother was a jockey. She started riding in 1969. I was 3 years old then. So she was one of the first half dozen women to be licensed as a jockey. And by a year later, she was the leading female jockey in the United States, a distinction that she held throughout her career. She retired in 1984. And in 1988, Patty Cooksey and then Julie Crone finally surpassed her wins record, both in the same week and 4 years after she had retired. So she had gained a lot of ground in the time that she rode. I started riding in 1987, the year before her record was broken. So after she had retired, my brother and sister had both been jockeys for a brief period of time. My brother outgrew it. My sister, I don't know what you call it, outbirthed it. She had four kids. So after she got pregnant with her second of four kids, she was married to a jockey. She retired from riding and became pretty much a full-time mom. But in any event, I started riding professionally in 1987. That was in Birmingham, Alabama, now defunct, Birmingham Turf Club. And I retired in 1998 as the second leading female rider in the nation by money earned, and then married Frank Brothers, who was a horse trainer at the time. And he retired in 2009 from training horses, went on to being a bloodstock agent. In 1999, I got into covering horse racing on television, first for TVG, then a little bit for Churchill Downs. I worked for them as a on-air analyst for a couple of years with Mike Battaglia. And that's where I was in 2000 covering the Derby when NBC came in to observe that year's Derby because they had picked up the contract from ABC Sports and they were starting it in 2001. And unbeknownst to me, they needed an on-track reporter for their broadcast team. And Mike Battaglia told him to watch me. Thank God he didn't tell me that because I would have been nervous. And at the end of that week of them there to observe, they asked me if I would join their horse racing broadcast team. And I've covered all kinds of stuff for them since then. I covered the World Equestrian Games in 2006 in Aachen, Germany. Covered those same games at the Kentucky Horse Park in 2010. I've covered show jumping and dressage and three-day eventing and even professional bull riding for NBC. But anyway, the main reason why you have me on is because my home base is Louisville, Kentucky, and I've covered the Kentucky Derby since 2001. So this was, I think, year 20, well, I guess 24 coming up. Next year will be 25 in a row. You know, part of being at Churchill Downs, my husband trained there, as I mentioned when he was a trainer, is that I've seen the Backside Learning Center up close and in person, and I see the value that it adds to the community on the backstretch. And so there's the whole thing, full circle.
Well, I was going to ask, how did you learn about the Backside Learning Center? Obviously, you just kind of mentioned it, but what involvement do you have here with the organization?
Well, when the Backside Learning Center first started, it was really because we had so many Latinos on the backside who didn't speak English and so many English speakers who didn't speak Spanish. And so the very first thing that they did was offered English second language and Spanish second language courses to sort of bridge that gap. And over the years, that gap has naturally been bridged. Most assistant trainers, shed reformmen on the backside who are born and raised in America speak Spanish fluently because they've had to learn it. And most Latino workers on the backside who desire upward mobility have learned English because they realize it's in their best interest. But back in the day, even jockey Rafael Bejarano was taking English second language courses at the Backside Learning Center. So as the backside workers became more proficient in the languages that they felt like they needed to have, the Backside Learning Center expanded. And so they've always been very good at looking at the community they serve and saying, how can we help? So the first thing I think that they, you know, branched out into was, well, we could help them with banking. We could help with translation. We can help with art. They need an outlet for, you know, art and for creativity. But I'd say that the most important segue that they've made is when they've helped with the tutoring of the children. Because, you know, imagine, like, we all went to school, presumably, in America. And we know what it's like to come home as a child and not understand the schoolwork and your parents sit down and help you with it, one of them. Imagine if your parents didn't speak the language that that schoolwork is written in. Maybe they're very, very intelligent. They don't speak the language. And so the Backside Learning Center really, I think, has made the families of the backside stronger by helping the children with the backside, on the backside with their after school work, because how else would they get the help that they needed? So I think that's been invaluable, but they do a lot of things. Samantha, you know more about what they do than I do. So why don't you talk about it?
Well, yeah, they definitely do a lot, and it's very well appreciated. So a little bit of a turn for all of the people, you know, owners, bettors, general fans of the sport. What is the importance of the work on the backside? Obviously, you spent some time on there as well. So if you could, I know you just mentioned it, but if you do want to elaborate a little bit more about like the parents of the children, what they do and why it is so important and crucial to this industry.
Yeah, well, first of all, as we're recording this, I'm in Saratoga Springs, New York, and I went to an event here at the Chamber of Commerce recently where David O'Rourke, who's the CEO of NYRA, came in to talk about the Belmont Stakes, which is going to be here in Saratoga Springs this year. And he put up a graphic, or the Chamber of Commerce put up a graphic that I thought was pretty interesting. And they compared home games of like the New York Knicks and different, you know, the Bills, the Buffalo Bills, versus the home games at Saratoga Springs, where they have 40 days of racing. And a lot of these home games comparatively are about around 40, and the numbers that they bring in. And so the people coming to the racetrack actually topped the numbers of the people coming to the game. So 1.1 million versus anywhere from 560,000 to 900,000. But nobody topped what's coming to the racetrack and fans in seats, right? Well, if you fan out from there and imagine all of the people that it takes to put that show on, then you can start to understand how much the impact is economically to Saratoga Springs and the whole environment, right? So pretty much, like, if you figure a horse trainer has 50 horses in the barn, then you've got to figure they have at least 25 employees. And all of those employees are spending money in that community. Many of those employees are sending kids to school. They all need a place to live. They're eating at restaurants. They're shopping at grocery stores. But then even beyond that, look at all the green space that the horse racing community creates, right? So you can't have horse racing if you don't have farms. And if you don't have places where horses are being born and bred and foaled and all of those things. And so the economic impact is great. And so again, I would think, like, I think it's around 1500 horses stable on the backside of Churchill Downs. And so you've got to imagine that there's at least 1,000 workers back there. And they need a place to live. And a lot of times they do need assistance from somebody on the backside, like the Backside Learning Center, because maybe they're new to the area, or maybe they, you know, have some sort of incident that happens in their family and they don't know how to handle it. And so the Backside Learning Center helps them. But the what happens with the Kentucky Derby and the races that the typical fan sees does not happen without the workers on the backside.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And we're actually seeing some of the workers come in now. So it's that time of the year, you can tell. So kind of shifting over to Kentucky Derby, could you tell us a little bit about what you'll be doing at the Backside Learning Center's Kentucky Derby Handicapping Social on April 16th?
Yeah, this is an event that the Backside Learning Center has been putting on for a long time, and I've been involved with it for a long time. It's evolved. It's changed over the years, but where we are right now feels like a really good place. It is hosted at the Louisville Thoroughbred Society, or I should say hosted by the Louisville Thoroughbred Society. And there are different owners like Brooke Smith, who created the program of purses with a purpose, where he has committed a certain percentage of his purse money to the Backside Learning Center, and he's encouraged other owners to do the same. And so Brooke Smith will likely be there. He usually is, and he has a horse on the road to the Kentucky Derby this year, which is pretty exciting. But so what we do is we just sort of break down the field. We've got Kate and Bradar and a couple of other handicappers. I think Joe Christofek will be with us. Do you remember who else, Samantha?
Yeah, I think Gabby Gaudette will be there as well.
Perfect. Yeah, Gabby Gaudette. And so, you know, these are handicappers who've been watching these Road to the Triple Crown, but Road to the Derby horses all throughout the season. Joe Christofek is, of course, in New Orleans. Kate and Bradar is everywhere. You might see her at Oakland Park. You might see her at the fairgrounds, at Gulfstream Park, wherever the big races are, and especially the three-year-old races this time of year. Kate is usually there covering them for FanDuel TV. Mm-hmm. Same with Gabby Gaudette, although I think she's based primarily in Florida this time of year. So you'll have all three of these handicappers who've really had a keen eye on these horses throughout this prep to the Kentucky Derby season. and we'll get their thoughts, their insights. They've been seeing them up close and personal. And what is the value in that? Because if you've watched the races, you feel like you could do the same thing, but not really, because when you see the horses in person, you can see whether or not that horse has grown or whether that horse has lost weight, which isn't something you want to see this time of year. And that's the kinds of things that Joe and Gabby and Caton are looking for. They want to see that these horses are on the improve, not on the backslide. And that's the kind of really inside information that we get from them.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to it. And lastly, what are you most looking forward to for this year's 150th Kentucky Derby? It's obviously going to be huge. We're already amping up for it.
Well, I mean, it's a historic event, right? So I've been involved with horse racing my entire life, and I can't talk about the Triple Crown without getting emotional when I was there for that first one in 37 years, right? So 2015, American Pharoah, he wins the Derby at Churchill Downs first, and he wins the Preakness. And then I was there covering the Belmont Stakes when he won that historic Triple Crown. Well, guess what? We now have a historic Derby upon us. So we are all going to be there for the horse that wins the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby. Not only the 150th Derby, but the Kentucky Derby is the longest running, non-interrupted sporting event in the history of sports in the United States. And so come hell or high water, they've made it happen. During the World War, it was postponed. During COVID, it happened in September, but it's happened every single year for 150 years. And we're going to be there to witness the horse that wins the 150th. So pretty much just that, the historical context of it. Right now, I'm reading a book called The First Kentucky Derby, because I really want, like, I guess I'm feeling nostalgic this year for like understanding the history and what really got us to this point. Before that book, I read the book Lexington, who was a super influential sire for the first at least 20 Kentucky Derbies. In the first Kentucky Derby, I'll just give you an example. There were 15 starters. He was the sire of 11 of the horses that competed in the first Kentucky Derby. He was not the sire of Aristides, who won the Kentucky Derby, but he was the grandfather of Aristides because he was the sire of Aristides' mom. So the dam sire. So anyway, yeah, it's such a historical event. So I don't even care who wins. It's going to be, I mean, as a journalist with NBC, I can't care who wins, right? I don't have a rooting interest. I'm just really thrilled to be there and be part of it.
Well, we're all looking forward to it. Very excited. Can't wait to see what Louisville's going to look like with that all. So thank you again for hopping on here and speaking to us about some of these topics. So
it's my pleasure, Samantha and Andrew. Good to talk to both of you.
Thank you so much, Donna.
All right, take care.
Now joining the Behind the Backstretch podcast, we have Buff Bradley and our intern, Samantha. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well, thank you.
Also doing well, thanks.
All right, so I'm going to be letting Samantha take the lead on this podcast interview. So, Sam, go right ahead.
Good morning, Buff. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Samantha.
If you could, please introduce yourself to the listeners. Who are you and what do you do in the racing industry?
All right, so I'm Buff Bradley. I trained horses for close to 30 years, and most of it was back here at Churchill Downs and on the Kentucky circuit. A few years ago, I decided that I wanted to move away from training. Things were changing, and I felt like that it was necessary for me to make a change. So I interviewed several jobs and finally landed one at Keeneland in the sales department on recruiting sales horses. And I love that. I love being there, and I'm The main thing about that is that I'm still involved with all the people on the backside. I still deal with trainers and owners and clients, consigners, sales companies, everybody. So it's still a blast for me to be out amongst everybody.
Great. Could you explain what the transition was like going from the backside to the front side?
Well, in all the years that I was training, I was on several different boards and committees. So I dealt a lot with trying to take the backside to the front side. I still do that a lot. So it's still in my wheelhouse to be able to go over to the front side, being over there and talking to them about what's going on in the backside. And I think I can relate to a lot of stuff that's happening on the backside and relate it back to the front side. So I've been able to do that a lot.
So how did you learn about the Backside Learning Center?
So my barn, I want y'all to know that I did dress up for this occasion today, but you can't see me. There's no cameras.
Yeah.
Just teasing. My barn was directly next door to this center. So when it started, I was familiar with it, just knowing it was right next door. I've seen it grow tremendously. And I've always been a big supporter of it. Since Sherry came on just over 10 years ago, I really saw it grow. And she's out. She knows the community. She's out in the barn area. And that's how I became familiar with it more, was that she came to my barn and started talking to myself and to my employees. I realized, too, that, you know, my employees, some of them had kids, and I've seen them grow up here and seen them coming over to the Backside Learning Center and really getting a lot out of it. I donated a lot of horse books to the center for people to come in. I didn't care if they gave them away, leased them out, whatever they wanted to do, but I think it's a very good area for people to come and learn, and they feel safe here and they don't feel pressured. You know, sometimes I think, especially from the Hispanic side, that they might feel a little alienated. And so I think that if they're able to come in here and feel at home, that they're more apt to learn. And that's the atmosphere that is provided here. So I really, you know, I've always been, as I said, I've always been a big supporter of it, and now recently been on the board of the Backside Learning Center.
So how did you become involved with the board?
So they had asked me several months back, Kate and Bradar had asked me, you know, if I would be interested, and then I talked to Sherry and met a few of the other ones and came to a meeting and came to a reception, and it was something that I really wanted to do because, as I said, the Backside Learning Center is, it's, you know, it's what we need to do for the backside, for the people that are back here, the employees and everything, and they feel welcomed here. And I wanted to make sure that that kept growing. And I think when you see the board, and now that I've met the board, I already knew Sherry's enthusiasm, but since I've met the board, it's really, I mean, I'm even more excited that, you know, there's stuff that we can do. And it's not always easy task, but I think that a lot of the people that are on the board are really good people that really want to see this grow and see that the people learning. And I think that's our reward is watching people learn and that this is going somewhere. It's a struggle in a lot of ways, but I think the good thing about the board is that not all of them, very few of them really come from a horse background, or so they see a different community, and our community back here on the backside is quite different than being outside the gates. It's a different kind of atmosphere. So I think that they've helped quite a few people back here.
Yeah, absolutely. You've obviously owned quite a few horses in your lifetime. As a former owner, why do you think it's important for other owners to become involved and invest in the backside community?
Well, and we were talking earlier about some of the owners that have had donated money and owners that have really wanted to support the backside. I think it's very important. Number one, I guess I saw it as a trainer and owner for all my years, because these are the people that are taking care of your investment. Mm-hmm. And really that's what they're doing. They're taking care of your investment. And you want to make sure that you have the best people back there that you can have. And obviously you want them educated. You want to give them, I think a lot of it is that you're giving them hope. You know, you're giving them hope to learn and move forward. They're just not somebody coming back to the backside and going and cleaning out a stall and going home. It's like going to McDonald's and fixing hamburgers. I mean, at least you know maybe those people are getting out there. Well, they're feeding somebody. But you know, here you're thinking you're really taking care of an animal in somebody else's possession, prized possession that they really want to do well. So you've got you want to support them in doing that. And I know that a lot of my clients over the years always cared about the help in the back in the barn, and I always did. It's because you know this is their life. This is what they chose to do, and that's not an easy job back here. You know, you're asked to be at the barn by 5 o'clock in the morning, and you're asked to work most of the day and 7 days a week, and Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving, and you know, every day. Mm-hmm. So I think you're asking a lot of these people, and if they've chosen to make this their livelihood and they have the joy of it, you want to give them that hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you again for giving your insight. Obviously, as a former backside person, we love to hear it. So.
Well, I'm still on the backside a lot. I do. I told you I got here early this morning and like to interact with the trainers back here, and if I see owners, a lot of the grooms or exercise riders back here at Churchill, I do know a lot of them and their kids, and so it's always fun for me to be back here and be amongst my people.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well,
and then we can just add one more question here. Sure. Are you excited for the just like the whole Derby 150, just the whole spectacle around it, or is it going to be kind of a hectic time for him? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I will be working Derby week and on the Derby, because that is what, you know, I'll be here trying to talk to our potential clients and people that will bring horses to our sale. So I'll be working, but to me, you know, Derby was always Christmas to me. I love Derby week. I love everything leading up to it. It's very exciting for our sport and our industry. You know, it is the pinnacle of racing, and that's the way I've always thought of it. So, you know, I like the atmosphere of that week, Derby week and everything. So to me, 150, I guess it's great. They build it up more, but to me, it's going to be Derby, and the 150 didn't bother me if it was 149 or 151. I want to be here excited.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Buff, for joining us today. And thank you so much, Samantha, for leading the interview. All right. I want to thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of the podcast. I want to thank Samantha, our intern from U of L, who did a great job leading the interviews on this podcast and being interviewed herself. I want to thank Donna Barton Brothers for joining us, and also Buff Bradley for joining us as well. Just a reminder, the third Derby Handicapping Social is coming up on April 16th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. I believe at this point it is now sold out, but you can follow along the action on our Facebook page. We will also have some more opportunities that we will be discussing in the coming weeks that are going to be really exciting for people to get involved with. And we also have another podcast coming up in the next couple of weeks that will be leading up to Derby, and especially with Derby 150 and our 20th anniversary this year. We are so excited for the coming weeks and the months ahead. So I want to thank you guys for listening once again to this podcast, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.